Welcome to Embracing Continuous Behaviour Change for Anger Management, the podcast that helps you to calm your emotions and communicate effectively. I'm your host, Claire Broadley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on calming your emotions and living a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to master your emotions. So good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Control the Flame. I'm Claire Broadley, and joining me today is our lovely guest, David Oliver. Thank you so much for joining us, David.
Thank you.
So David has come to speak to us today to talk about his experience of overcoming and becoming resilient after the sudden passing of his mum. So David, will you just give us a little bit of an introduction about you? Who is David Oliver?
David Oliver is a kind, compassionate person that has found his place in the world. And through experiencing various positive situations in the last 22 years since my mum passed away, I have discovered ways that I can be satisfied in myself and also feel that I am part of the world as well. I first had a experience when I went to a shop that was called Still Waters that offered Reiki. It's an energy healing practice that originated in Japan and was brought over to the West a few years ago. And it's been growing in popularity since. And it was a experience that I didn't know I was going to have, but I very much enjoyed. I came across the shop and went in. There was a person practicing Reiki, and the shopkeeper asked if I wanted to try it. So I took the opportunity. And I just went into the room. I didn't know anything about what was going to happen to me, but I trusted the person who was offering it. So I lay down and closed my eyes, and the whole process took about half an hour. And then when I left the shop, I just felt remarkably better than I had when I went in. I felt physically lighter, more grounded, more present. And the weight of all of the sadness and the associated feelings that had come with my mum passing away had dissipated to the point where I almost couldn't believe how well I felt in that situation.
So let's stop that there and let's rewind to the however many years before it when and you had explained to me prior to me pressing record that things happened that were out of your control that had a huge impact on your self-esteem, and you had gone out one evening, and tell me what happened kind of when you got home from that evening out. What happened then?
Well, I went to sleep feeling quite happy because in my mind I was 18. I'd got a job at a bar, which I had associations with anyway through going there and through having friends there. And then I woke up the morning after, I think it was about 7 o'clock, by being alerted by my father and my brother that we had to give the news of my mum's passing to my grandmother. That my father wanted to go and tell her face to face because we knew that normally.
And that was the first you knew that your mum had passed?
Yeah, that was the first time. I hadn't even had a chance to properly wake up. All I remember from being woken up and told what we had to do, I then remember going. It was a completely contrasting day. The morning was wet and grey and cold, and I'd remember blankly staring through the raindrops on the car window as we were travelling over to my grand's house. And not thinking or feeling anything, and it was such an alien sensation. And I don't think that unless you experience someone passing away and the emotions that you go through, I feel it's almost impossible to explain just how it feels like you've completely scraped the barrel. You just feel so unreal and so...
And I guess it was a huge shock to be woken up, as you said earlier. It was almost like you'd been out, you'd had beer, you felt almost like you were still under the influence of that. So you've got that feeling in itself, and then the feeling of being told your mum's not here anymore, to we now have to go and tell your grandma. That's a lot to juggle.
Yeah, and absolutely. The shock of it kind of nullified anything else, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel... I knew I was presently there, but mentally I felt that like my consciousness had been kind of drop-kicked into outer space, to be honest. I just felt so far away because it was such a sudden change in my life and in the situation I was in.
Yeah.
That I didn't know how to do anything about it or how to feel about it. And there was that feeling of absolute helplessness, I think, because in that time, the person that I would have wanted to get comfort from would have been my mother. And obviously I couldn't. I mean, me and my dad got on, but we weren't really close. But they were, my dad and my brother were both in the same situation as I was. So it didn't really feel like there was anyone who wasn't involved that we could get some comfort that we all needed from.
We were
all together in that situation, but we were all very much alone because my father had divorced my mother not long after I was born. So they still had a friendship, but that relationship was kind of gone in their personal sense. Brother's about 3 years older than me. I mean, I was 18, so yeah, he was early 20s. And both of us were at that stage where our mother was becoming more than just our mother. She was becoming a friend and someone we could talk to, not just as a child. And that's the one thing that I really strongly felt gutted about, is that I just kind of become realizing that I was able to have that relationship with her, and then it was suddenly cut short. So,
and that's it. Yeah, there is that change of relationship, isn't there, when you become an adult? And I'm only speaking this from, I have a son who's 22, and that's changed our relationship because we now do things together, and it's more of that friendship, as you've just said, rather than a maternal. There is still obviously that there, but we have a friendship and it's lovely.
Yeah.
So how did that impact you from having to tell your grandma to then moving forward in life?
I was kind of, best way to describe it, on autopilot. I had to go to start my job, I think, a couple of days after. And basically, I felt that because I was literally in bed when I was told about the situation, but that became my safe space, if you like. My way of dealing with life was, unless I had to be at work or had something I had to do, I was in bed sleeping. And it wasn't restful, healthy sleep. It was avoidance, basically, avoiding the reality of life. And I got into a habit of becoming pretty much nocturnal, to be honest. My mind would be anxious and upset, so I found it difficult to sleep. And then when I would fall asleep, it would be kind of like twilight hours, and then I would find myself waking up in late afternoon, probably like sometimes 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, and that was my start of my day. And I'd be starving because I'd been sleeping for so long. I didn't want to eat because I had the, I think it was the fight or flight kind of situation going on. I had so much adrenaline that I felt sick, but I didn't want to eat. But I was wired on that adrenaline and overtired, but somehow I just managed to keep going. I didn't want to not live, but I didn't have any understanding of how I could live and what I should be doing.
And did you get any help from any medical professionals?
No, I didn't. I didn't really have anyone offer it to me, and I wasn't really aware of, I didn't know anybody that had been in any similar situations or through depression that were on any kind of medication or having any counselling. Yeah. I had never been introduced to my life, and that's one thing that I've really felt has had a lasting impact on, in the way that I have had to, in a lot of ways, teach myself a lot about life since then. Because, like I said, my father, hasn't always been really a very emotional person anyway. We've mm-hmm. got on practically, but him and my brother have more of a close relationship than me and him do. And me and my mother were more similar. So again, if I'd had any advice, I would have wanted it to be from her. I didn't really have anybody kind of, being a late teenager, I think my dad had kind of got used to me just within reason doing what I wanted because I was at that age. And he wasn't really kind of checking up on me. And I just seemed to kind of do my own thing. And I didn't really know what steps I could have taken therapy-wise. Yeah, I just went out, like I said, I did my job and did it. But it wasn't like I was really present. I was making the drinks and taking the money and doing what a barman does and just doing it, but not really, again, not very presently. I was just kind of floating through it, because the feeling that I had, this weird numbness, I can't really explain the mentality that I had. I knew I had to do things and I was getting on with it, but it's almost like I was just almost observing myself do it rather than feeling like I was.
Yeah, it's like living life anonymously almost, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's such a bizarre, I'd say feeling, but it's not, I don't know if it really is a feeling, because you feel very little. You just are just operating somehow. Mm-hmm. But like when I came across this shop that offered the Reiki, the sensations I felt feelings again after having experienced it. And that was, I've looked into it, and a lot of people go, you know, you can always make up things and create stuff to, you know, placebo effect kind of thing. But it wasn't that, because there was no way I could have programmed myself to have such a change in my understanding of life and the feelings that I felt. I actually felt better than I ever had even before my mum died. I just felt so vibrant and so energized. It was a therapeutic situation because of the situation I'd been in presently at that time, but it was also just overall just made me feel happier in the world, because I felt connections to not just the life immediately in my where I was, but also to other things as well, and it gave me a sense of comfort, and that was the essential thing.
You described it before as though someone was skimming a pond.
Yeah, I it was like I could feel a pulling of heaviness from around me. It was like the edge of my, what I now would call my aura, my energetic field. Yeah. I could feel it being cleaned, and I didn't know, like, I didn't, you know what it's like, you don't really know what, there's a comparative feeling until you feel different, does that make sense? But it felt abnormal, but it felt right, and it felt relieving. It felt like all the heaviness and all the anxiety and, like I said, these questions of why has this happened? How am I meant to do this? All the things that had just become noise, I guess, in my head were just removed and left me feeling for a while quiet in my head and content in my present situation rather than looking to the past or looking to the future and wanting what I didn't have.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned before as well about it was as though somebody put colour back into your world.
Yeah, because it felt like to me, there's a lot of, in my head, in that situation, I was like, it felt like there was only black and white. It's either was like this or it wasn't like this. It was definite or it wasn't. There was no kind of in between. But experiencing the Reiki felt like, so it was like, you know, those felt pictures you used to get. I don't think you still make them with the felt outlines and you colour in the spaces. It felt like I was colouring in the spaces that were blank previously. And it was it made me enjoy life again. You know, it still needed a long way to go, but it made me feel passionate about things. It made me feel that there was a point to things, that there was more than just what I'd experienced, and I was intrigued with things again, and I was curious. It brought back my intrigue. It was so powerful.
So, and like you've explained, anyone who has kind of depressive episodes will know that when you're wandering around in that feeling of being low, and as you say, things are black and white, it either is or it isn't, you can't just walk into a shop where someone offers you something and walk out feeling amazing and completely different. It doesn't work like that. So for you to go in and have the person practice Reiki on you, and as again you said, you don't know a feeling until you experience it. So you experience this feeling of, I'm going to say euphoria, whether it was so we'll call it euphoria, and you've walked out and it's like you're looking through your life through a different lens now, and that's so powerful.
It's like I was looking through life through my own eyes again.
Yeah.
That was the nicest feeling, is like I felt myself not a passenger in a body that was doing things. I felt like it was me looking through my own eyes and happy as much as I could be to do that, not wanting to shy away from things, not wanting to hide and not know about anything else. It made me feel like I could have some energy to make effort more than I had before. And it was empowering. I think that's the best way to put it. It empowered me to want to try and expand upon what I already knew and what I'd already experienced and allow myself to enjoy life.
Brilliant. And you went back to that shop later, didn't you?
Yeah, I went in. I'd had some time to kind of settle into how I felt. And I wanted to go in and actually look in the shop, because at the first time, I'd originally gone in there because I don't know anyone that's hearing this or watching it has seen amethyst crystal. It's a deep purple normally. And yeah. You get these like obelisks where they're like a hollow piece of rock that's got the amethyst in, and they had these in the windows, and I was just intrigued with them because I'd never seen anything like it before, and that's what kind of got my attention originally. And I wanted to go in and explore the shop and look at the books and all the things they had for sale, because the first time I'd gone up, had this conversation, walked into the therapy room and had that experience, and I guess that's what I was supposed to have at the time. But I went and had to look around the shop. I had an actual conversation with the shopkeeper, explained kind of what I've said to you about how I felt after. And she said, well, if you're interested, there's a person actually can teach you how to do this in the city in Worcester. So I took her phone number and I made that phone call. And then a couple of weeks after I'd spoke to her was the next time she had an opening to do what's called the attunement process. which is a ceremonial, a ritual, if you like. You normally, there was about 10 people there in total, but you need a few people to make it worthwhile, basically, because once you've been attuned to it, then you also practice it on each other to experience the energy flowing through you, because it can be used to help yourself, but it can also be used as your body's a channel for it, and you channel it into other people as well, so they have the benefit of the energy. I'm going to tell you, if it's okay, I want to tell you a short story about that attunement. It was 2 days. The first day we kind of discussed the background of it, and there was some information about there's different places you put your hands on a person's body to put the energy into them. And then we did the actual attunement ceremony part, which involves using symbols that are drawn with the hand in the air, or intentions are set, and the energy and the thoughts are concentrated into the person, and it basically changes the frequency of your vibration to be attuned with the frequency of the Reiki energy, and that makes it more tangible and sensitive to yourself, and you're sensitive to it, so you can feel it, and then you can tell if it's through you, and there's a lot of different sensations that come with that. And then we went home to rest, and then the second day we came back in, and we had the opportunity to partner up with someone else and practice it on each other. And there was a lady that I hadn't spoke to for the whole weekend, but I became the partner who I was working with her, and I felt my hands. I was going to go through the formulaic way where you start at the top of the head and work your way down the body, but my hands literally kept getting pulled, like there was something moving them to them above her shoulders. And I tried to pull away, and it kept three times, four times. And I was like, well, this is obviously where the energy is needed. So I left my hands there. And eventually there was so much energy being drawn out of my hands into her body that there was the air between my hands and her back. It was about that far from her. And I pushed down and down and down, and I got about 3 inches or so away from her body, and I couldn't move my hand any further. The air was so thick with the energy, it was literally resisting against it. And it was such a bizarre experience, but I relaxed my hand, and the force of the energy that had built up literally pushed my hand up into the air. And I just burst out laughing because I couldn't believe it, but I knew it was real. And eventually I kept my hands there, and the energy calmed down as she took what she needed from me. And then she took her turn to practice on me. And I can't really remember a lot of that. I remember I felt calmer, but I was just more so kind of intrigued with the situation I'd been in. And basically, after we spoke to each other, once we'd done the practice on each other, she explained that she was a hairdresser, and her shoulders were very tight and knotted because of how she positions her arms when she's cutting hair. So that in that situation made sense. And all these things basically really impacted. I knew that I trusted that the Reiki was what it was, but those experiences I had dictated to me again proved to me that that's what I was experiencing, and made me, again, brought more color to my life, because I realized that things like this were actually real, and made life very interesting for me. So that was really poignant.
Fantastic. Yeah. So did that then make you a Reiki master? I don't know how that works.
No, there's three attunement stages. The first one just makes you sensitive to the energy, and you can practice it on people, but for a voluntary situation if you want to.
Okay.
But it just means that you are attuned to it. Then it's recommended by the teacher I had to leave about a year between each attunement to give yourself time to really kind of settle into it. And then there's Reiki 2, which teaches you some symbols you can use to amplify energy or change the tone of it, depending on what you want to use it for.
Yeah.
And Then again, a year after, I did the Reiki Master Attunement, which you learn a specific symbol that enables you to send it over a distance as well. So you don't have to actually be in the same room as the person, because the logic is it's like radio waves, you know, the frequency's there. So if you can connect to it, you can send the energy of the healing over that to whoever you want to send it to. It's another interesting experience, but you just trust that you picture that person in your mind. And for me, I can just feel that there's the connection there and that I can send it targeted to them, and they will then, I've got some reviews of the work I've done and the sensations people have felt. So,
so you could literally do that kind of online.
I could send it to you right now.
Wow.
If I wanted
that's
to.
That's a whole new conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, definitely. But the thing is, I'm very, you know, there's a lot of other things I've done as well, and this isn't just, but this was really the catalyst, I believe, to me, like I said, becoming a person who, because at the time, I enjoyed it, but it also, it made me different again to normal, what I thought was normal life. It was a good experience, but it was an alternative point of view, which in the grand scheme of things was abnormal, really. I mean, it's become more popular now, people know about it, but it was still very niche, I guess, at the time.
Yeah. And then there became another point where you saw massive change and massive growth, and that was when you came across neurolinguistic programming, NLP. So tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Well, the year after I'd done my first attunement, I then did the second attunement to be then you can legally get insured and become a practitioner and charge money for the healing services. Yeah. And the day after, I'd arranged to see a friend of mine, and I was still amped up with this energy. And thinking about it, that year between it was, I was making efforts to go and see my friends and going out and doing things again. So that was kind of, I'm just kind of reflecting, like, I hadn't really thought about that time in between, but I've just realized, you know, I was going out and being social again and, you know, enjoying life and, you know, making the most of what I did have. And I went to my friend's house and I just started rambling, I guess, about the Reiki attunement process and how I felt about it and all these exciting things. And he listened to me politely, but he wasn't really interested because it wasn't of any interest to him, because it was just how he was. And I left me with this impression that there was other ways that I could potentially work in a therapeutic manner, because I kind of realized that that was something that I was ambitious about doing and I wanted to follow through. But not everybody was going to be willing to try Reiki or be interested in it, because it wasn't something that a lot of people knew about, and there was other ways of doing things. And I kind of had this thought click in my mind of maybe I should look into more scientific and more established ways of providing therapy for people. So I looked into various ways to become a counselor and different ways of educating myself to get a qualification and do something that I would be able to work with. And I can't remember, I think I just like googled therapies, and I came across a company that were advertising NLP. And again, it was something I hadn't heard of before, but I read their website was a really nice green color, and I assume for yourself and anybody else that knows about NLP, a lot of it is about presenting things in an attractive way to get people to be wanting to use it, I guess. And now I have that knowledge, looking at the way the wording of the website was and the color scheme and everything, it was very saturated with the ethos of NLP, I guess, is the best way to put it. And in
a
way,
it spoke to me.
It was very trustworthy and it made sense. Mm-hmm. And basically, it explained about how everybody's experiences give them an impression of what they like or don't like. And it explained about how it expands upon natural methods of doing things, but there are certain angles you can come from to help people with certain perspectives, with whether they're more interested in listening and their skills are in hearing things and that'll motivate them to act, or whether or physical, because everybody has their kind of skill set, I suppose. And I could speak to someone who is very hyperactive and energetic, and trying to get them to sit and listen to me might not be easy for them. But if you're creating if you're creating a situation that they're comfortable in, then they are more likely to allow the process to work, because they aren't just less, it's less jarring than trying to do something that they're not comfortable with. Yeah. And either way, I was like, well, I've even before, like, I think even when I was at school, my overall demeanor has meant that people have felt they were able to approach me and open up to me and tell me things. And doing the NLP course gave a formal structure to the kind of things I was doing anyway, but didn't really know that I was doing. I was just naturally my way. So I actually used some of the money I'd inherited from my mum's passing to pay for the course. So I saw it as an opportunity that was provided for me to do what I, not how I thought I was going to go about it, but another way to improve my life and to better myself and have something of a qualification. Because the reason I was kind of so kind of wanting to improve myself is when I was at college, when my mum passed away, I left college because I just didn't want to do it anymore. So the only formal qualifications I had GCSEs, which are okay, but not really going to get you far in life. So I was aware that I needed to get something more, and this seemed like a good avenue to go down. So I organized myself going on the course and booked it, paid for it. And then I think it was about, it was in the spring time. So yeah, a couple of months later when the course started, it was a place called the Cotswold Conference Centre in the Cotswolds in Gloucestershire. Okay. It was a beautiful place. It was perfect for what we needed to do. And we went more in depth about the different methods that we could use as therapeutic tools and the logic behind them and how they were practiced. And we were basically introduced to this concept, split into groups of however many we needed to practice it and experience it, and then come back in as a majority and explain our experiences with it and our understanding of it to show that we'd learnt it. And then it was kind of allocated as being a pass because they could see that we got it and that we were able to do it. And one of the methods that really has an impact on me was they ask you to visualize like a video of a situation that has caused you negative sensations or feelings. I naturally used the situation I've talked about with my mum as the thing that I wanted to help. And logic is that when you're overwhelmed by something, your perception of it is that you are helpless, that it's out of your control and you are at its whims, basically. Yeah. And the point of this exercise was to reverse that. So the analogy I use is turning a beach ball into a tennis ball. Instead of having something
big, make it smaller.
Instead of having something that you kind of can't control and you're unsure about, to having something that you can hold in your hand and be sure that you are holding it rather than it holding you.
Yeah, and controlling it.
Yeah, and the method was to remove the sensory input from it. So you would turn a color video into black and white, you would turn the volume down or turn it off completely, and through that
process,
you're creating this understanding that you can control the situation yourself, and you can decide how you want to feel about it. So I did that. I made the picture smaller. I took all the senses out of it. I felt like I'd concentrated it into something I could hold. And as soon as that change happened, I felt it's almost like an uncorking of something inside me. I felt it in the middle of my chest. Wow. And I just started crying. And I cried. I went and had a sit down for, I think it was about a good 10 minutes. And just all of this, all of these tears and all of these feelings of frustration and all the negativity in the mourning, I guess, from my mum passing just poured out. And then once I'd got to the point where I'd exhausted it, basically, and kind of gathered my thoughts again, and had some time to really process it, because I just felt it was bringing the subconscious to the conscious, and when you do that, then you're able to understand how you feel about it, and then you can work on it. So I then had this revelation. I was like, well, that's what I needed to do. I needed to really focus on it instead of wanting to hide away from it or wanting to sleep so I'm not thinking about it. I really needed to be brave enough to, within, I had the help of that situation creating that point, but I needed to do it for myself, I guess. And I did.
Yeah.
And it gave me the therapeutic sensation of the practice, and it helped me understand the
NLP is so NLP. Amazing at doing that. Because you can coach yourself using NLP, as you say, just it just is a change in outlook. I'm an NLP practitioner, and I find it so helpful. It's absolutely has changed how I am. And I wouldn't sing about it if I didn't believe in it. So looking at where you are now, so you're just about to start a job as a clinical support worker, but there's also something much more exciting coming up, and that is you are going to start your own therapy room in a clinic. Am I right?
Yeah, it's a place called the Tranquil Spa. So they offer aesthetic things, massages, hair, makeup, and all those different kinds of things. And I approached them a while ago because I moved to the area last October. And I knew this bar existed, but I never really investigated it. But I thought, well, maybe in previous years, I might not have thought it would be an option, because with alternative therapies, they were still very alternative. But I was thinking over the last few years, especially the last 3-4 years where people have, we had the whole isolation because of COVID and all that time on our hands. I don't know if you're aware, if you've looked into it, but there's a lot more people are having an interest in spiritual experiences now, or natural methods to make themselves feel better, because I think a lot of people have had that time to... Yeah, it is. It's really interesting. There's a lot of people that are still quite confused about what they're experiencing as well, because they aren't so sure whether it is just them making it up or whether it's something else, because it can be a very unsettling experience when you grow that understanding and that awareness of things that are beyond what you would normally sense.
I think COVID made us question a lot about our lives, didn't it? So many people have made so many changes and are not just taking what they're shown as the answer, or they are more inquisitive. So you are going to... Sorry, say that again.
I said they're also trusting themselves more as well, rather than
looking at other people. Brilliant. So when do you start your spa room?
Well, I'm going to start putting things together this weekend. The job that I'm working, I do 3 12-hour days a week. So I did, I did Tuesday and Wednesday. I've got today off. I'm working tomorrow. And then I've got Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday until I have to be back in work.
Yeah.
So after I spoke to you, okay. I'm going to go through my roster. Because that's what I was waiting to have available to me was when I was actually going to be working regularly. Because as I've been kind of a trainee at the moment, it's been kind of fitting me where I can be working with other people to kind of learn on the job. But after the 2nd of September, which is not far away, I will have done all of my training and then I will be fully fledged independent worker. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So thank you. So yeah, basically I need to kind of weigh up when I need to just rest and when I can actually go and do other things because my body's getting used to it. I've lost quite a lot of weight in the last 3 weeks. I've gone down a t-shirt size, so I'm seeing that's a good thing because I'm on my feet, like I said, 12 hours a day pretty much for the time I'm working. But I need to also make sure that I don't try and overdo it and end up exhausted. I mean, with Reiki, it's quite calm because you're literally just stood there doing the energy work. And as you pass the energy through you, you're also receiving it yourself. So you get the therapeutic benefit of the energy you're working with, which is lovely. So yeah, I need to, I'm going to go through my roster, look at the dates I've got off, work out when I want to be busy. And then I need to speak to the manager of the spa and tell them when I want to advertise that I'm available. And they've been really kind. They've got a person who's been putting together posts for the spa with my details on it. So I kind of need to inform them of when I want to let people know and, you know, hopefully open the bookings up and have people coming in and having my therapeutic services. So, and one of the other managers, one of the other managers of the spa also wants to learn it. And a couple of people that I work with in the hospital are also interested in learning it as well. So that's one thing that I want to put together is when we've all got the time together, I can actually attune people to start their journey on it as well. So,
fantastic. Right. Well, we will put a link through to how people can work with you in the description of the podcast. So people can reach out to you should they wish to do so. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on as a guest, David. Is there anything that you would like to leave our listeners with? Any last thoughts or?
Well, the main point of me wanting to talk to you was because I was hoping that through what people have heard about my experiences, that they can gain an understanding that it can sometimes feel impossible to move on from where you are.
Yeah.
But, and it can be difficult to motivate yourself to do it. But unless there is a practicality that's stopping you doing it, whether you physically can't do it or whether there's somebody maybe emotionally stopping you for whatever reason, if you are free to do, relatively free to do what you want to do, then try and begin with just telling yourself that you are allowed to do it. Because if you tell yourself you can't, you will, you know, we mostly believe ourselves and we trust ourselves in our
Absolutely.
And sometimes that can be a double-edged sword. Sometimes it can be great because you feel motivated to do things. Other times you can be your own worst enemy and convince yourself that you're not able to do something or you shouldn't do something. But unless you're unless you're doing any harm to yourself or anyone else, there's no reason why you can't do anything that's perfectly ethical, legal, and reasonable to do. And that's the lesson that I've learned is I told myself a lot of things that stopped me moving forwards because I was scared and because I felt that I was worried that, well, if I try and I don't succeed. But I got to the point, not where I was belligerent, but I stopped worrying about that. And if you can just get to that point, then you can unleash a lot of things and realize your own full potential and you can move forward from things and you can end up in a much better situation. My mentality now, I would never have been able to imagine I could get anywhere near as content and happy as I am now a few years ago.
Brilliant.
But here I am and here I am talking about it. So anyone that's listening that might want to have the opportunity and may have looked at linking on to be on this podcast. All I can say is just do it. Just fill in that form, fill that information out, put yourself in that situation. And then once you've done it and you have that experience, that's something that is now part of your life. And once you've done it, you know it's safe and you know it's good. And then you can do the next thing and the next thing. So yeah, just try not to get in your own way if you can.
Thank you so much, David. And I will pop the links into the description of the podcast. Thank you all for listening. I hope you've had, you've sought some, I don't know what I'm trying to say, or you've gained some knowledge, that's what I'm trying to say, from David's words and the way that he has healed. Thank you once again, David.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy listening to the episode and learn some tips on how to manage your emotions in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to calm your emotions and communicate effectively.